Howdy ho there, neighbor.
Well, hello. Starting me off blind here in 2014.
Yep.
Let's see. So, like I said, it smells porterish.
Okay.
It looks dark. It's a bit of, you know, toffee, a bit of astringency on the nose. Smoked?
It's not smoked.
It's an alt?
It's not what they call it.
It kind of tastes like an alt, don't you think?
A little bit. Yeah, you're probably right. You want to know what it is? Yet?
Let me get some flavors out from this.
It's not a beer that you, like, know or...
Mm-hmm.
You might have had it once, but it's not like, oh yeah, that beer, old friend. It's not that.
So. It's woody. It's got a little bit of cedar kind of flavor to it. Has a sort of caramel sweetness. A pretty piney bitterness.
Well, I was going to actually kick off the show with this one as well, so you can go through this all again.
Well... All right, might as well tell me then.
So. This is Mischievous from Helltown Brewing. It's a brown ale.
It's a brown ale.
I was thinking, you know, we said last week we need to find more good brown ales to put into our lives. So I'm like, hey, Mischievous. Price was right. Give me a growler of that.
Wonder what the ABV on this is.
Oh, if only we had a tool to find such information.
Such a thing does not exist. This is not a world of wonder. All right, so...
Okay, Helltown Brewing there in Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania. We had their one of their Belgian-y things in a bottle on the show not too long ago. Remember, I commented that I didn't know they bottled anything, and it was a bottle-conditioned Belgian something or another that I picked up at Giant Eagle. But anyway, Helltown... Mischievous Brown. Details coming soon. Few details. Oh, here we go. 5.5 ABV. It does have details, it just doesn't have a description.
Right. Interesting.
All right, so what's new in the last 3 days?
It's been, yeah, I guess it's been three, technically. Well, we went shooting.
Yes, Greg shot a gun. Pew, pew, pew.
I shot a handgun for the first time.
His first shot was smack dad center in the bullseye at 10 yards. And he's probably like, "What's this bullshit's easy."
Now, I noticed it, but I did not think it was easy. I just thought beginner's luck. Because I have, you know, I have ADD and my hands shake all the time, even and especially when I have something heavy in
there. Right.
So I was just kind of just trying to line it up and really shaking. And so it took a lot of effort to get it. And that's why the rest of them, I mean, I think I got three bullseyes.
Yeah, you did.
But the rest of it was kind of spread over to the right. And you also commented on one of the times, one of my clips, only six rounds a clip, but one of them I was leaning back.
Yeah.
And that I really... kind of messed up.
Every shot would rock you back a little bit. And yeah, you gotta lean into it a little bit. Probably just, you know, you probably shot, what, 30 rounds or so?
No.
24. You shot at least 24. You shot at least three clips. I thought you shot four.
I know it was 3 to 4 clips.
Okay.
It was no more than that.
Okay. So, yeah, okay, 20, up to 24 then.
Yeah.
And, you've made comments in the past about target shooting as a recreation as being unnecessary, right? About how, you know, let's have stronger handgun laws and, you know, people shouldn't, you know, don't need that recreation of target shooting.
I don't know whether that was my exact point. If it was, then that would probably not be the point that I would have settled on. But... I thought that it would be better if, you know, if in target shooting cases you had, like, you had a handgun there at the place you were doing it, like in a facility, and so you could still do your target shooting, mm-hmm. but you had to go through a lot of hoops and registrations in order to do it right.
I see. Instead of just going to the state game lands
right.
on a Wednesday morning with a couple of the strangers shooting guns. Pew, pew, pew.
And I don't know if my opinion of that has changed, sure. but I don't. It was interesting. I think I want to do it when it's less cold.
Yeah, yeah. Do it when you can have more time.
Yeah.
Probably get next time I go, I'll get one of my dad's rifles or something too, because it's really different shooting handguns at 10 yards like that versus doing something with more accuracy at 50 yards, 100 yards, something like that. You know, with a rifle. So it's a different experience. And one you should definitely try as well.
Hmm. Well, like I said, I have done rifle shooting, you know, way, way long ago, at least 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't be else, you know, that wouldn't be something I've never done before.
Mm-hmm. How about shoot my dad's crossbow?
I'd be scared.
It's a different thing too, because you know, you're just shooting a bow, no big deal. But like when I shot it, he didn't have any string silencers on or anything, so he pulled the trigger, and all these cams are, you know, twisting, and it goes ka-twang. You know, it's a pretty loud thunkity yeah. twang sound when you shoot the crossbow, and it startled me the first time because I was just expecting something a little more gentle, like shooting a compound bow, and man, but those things whip those bolts. A crossbow arrow is called a bolt, and
yeah.
it whips those bolts down.
I know from playing plenty of video games.
Okay.
the handgun was kind of how I expected to. Although mm-hmm. I guess the only thing I would say is that the handgun was heavier than I thought.
Okay. How about, was it louder than you thought?
I mean, it's louder than in the movies.
Right.
Right, we had some ear protection on, but yeah, it's pretty loud.
I couldn't imagine, like, I mean, I get, it's a different situation, but I couldn't imagine being at war, you know, where you need to hear everything, and then there's yeah. all that shooting. I yeah, just couldn't yeah. imagine how bad your ears would hurt, ring at the end of the day. But I guess, you know, on the bright side, you survived the day, so it's a small price at that point, but... Or like, you know, imagine using it in self you know, defense, right? Shooting it off in your house. Imagine how loud that would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I bet though your adrenaline's up so much that you yeah. almost don't notice it until later.
Yeah. Probably.
But let's hope you never have to do that. And if you did, well, yeah, you'd have a lot to work to do, right? To unlock it.
Yeah, I don't keep it loaded under the bed or anything. So, or maybe I do if the bad guys are listening. But, yeah, it would be, well, the guy's at work, he's the guy, when the end of the world comes, if you're not in his inner circle, you want to stay the fuck away from him.
Uh-huh.
He's going to kill every motherfucker out there who's not in his, like, close-knit circle of people. He was talking to me about how the rounds he gets are better for flesh penetration and things. Like 18 inches of, he doesn't shoot any rounds, don't get 18 inches of ballistic penetration.
Wow.
But, you know, he was talking about getting me some self-defense rounds, you know. He didn't say it, but what he meant was to keep loaded in your gun for when, you know, the crazies start, you know, breaking into your house.
You know,
maybe I'm naive, but
well, you know, if that happens, if the crazies start breaking into your house, well, you know what, civilization is gone anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could have a burglar situation, right?
You can have a burglar situation, but I mean, if the restless hordes are breaking into your house, right. Well, it's time to let the house go, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, you talk about the burglar situation. And I've thought about it, but I don't know. I weigh the risks and the benefits, and...
I saw a video of a guy, some sharpshooter guy, old guy, but apparently like a Smith & Wesson guy. He shot a snub-nosed revolver upside down with his pinky from 200 yards away. 200 yards.
200 yards.
At a man-sized target and hit it in one shot.
Snub-nosed, like a two-inch barrel.
Yeah.
That's insane.
With it upside down with his pinky.
I will see my gun. I don't think I could hit anything at 200 yards. My dad's 357. He has probably has a 6-inch barrel. Might even have an 8-inch barrel, but it's probably a 6-inch barrel. That thing's a lot more accurate. I'm not having having compared that versus my gun. His gun's so easy to shoot and get nice, accurate groupings compared to mine. I need to figure out what I'm doing wrong with mine. Maybe it's just, the semi-automatic weapons. You really can't expect to get the same, 4-inch barrel semi-automatic to get the same kind of accuracy as a single action.
Here we go. Here's the thing. So this is the guy. And let's go to this shot.
Why don't you plug in the...
PD, which means it's a 38 Special 357 Magnum 2-inch J-frame with fixed sight. So to make this stunt even harder, when I go back to 200, I'm going to shoot it upside down using my little finger to fire a double action. I'm going to shoot it in one hand unsupported. And what we have for a target is an 18 by 24. It's a standard steel challenge target, so it rings pretty good when you hit it. So you're going to know whether or not I hit it right quick. So I'll be back at 200. We're going to go make the shot, and this should be quite fun.
Okay, so that's...
Hey!
That's...
He's
one-handed, upside down.
Yeah. And 200 yards is... That's two football fields. That's huge.
No, I've shot rifles 200 yards, and it's not easy.
And you with this snub-nosed 357. Upside down with his pinky finger. One hand, one-armed.
That's pretty impossible. Like it says right there, impossible shot.
So, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Yeah, I need some practice.
Just look up impossible 200 yard snub nose revolver shot. You can take a look.
And he doesn't even make a big deal. He kind of just aims and poof.
Yeah.
He doesn't overthink it or anything. He just nails it.
I think he was. I didn't show you all the. He aimed a little bit. And then shot it.
Okay. Cool.
But that's a guy who I guess is,
that guy shot.
Yeah.
Millions of rounds in his lifetime.
And he's sponsored, so all his bullets are free and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to get a gig like that. At the rounds we were shooting at 35 cents a round. Can't be doing that all day.
No.
Can't afford to do that all day.
So that was fun. That was the day after New Year's after I slept over because we were pretty blitzed.
Mm-hmm.
You're beeping.
I know. Heather keeps texting me. Nonsense stuff.
Cold air.
It's going to be pretty nuts in the next couple of days if the forecasts are right.
Yeah, I mean, we're really weird weather pattern, which we're getting. We got warm and then really cold and snow, and then it's back to warm, back to 40s again today, and then it's going to drop down to 1 degree or below that.
Tuesday, the high is going to be zero. That's what I saw this morning.
Yeah. And then it's going to come right back up to 40.
That's good.
So it's just this weird, this weird system that's coming and is blowing all this Arctic air in. But of course, what's happening on all the conservative sites is, look, it's cold outside, therefore there's no such thing as global warming.
Did you see the, I'm trying to find the story, Heather heard about it, she just told me about it this afternoon, that satellite measured, oh here it is, what's the date on this? Satellite measured a new coldest temperature on Earth, but it's not official because it wasn't measured terrestrially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, January 4th. Here we go. The new record, well, not record, but the temperature measured was minus 136 Fahrenheit. Where I guess the previous, you know, the real record book record is like minus 88 or something like that. Let's see. The new NASA Landsat 8 satellite has determined that a high ridge on the East Antarctic Plateau has temperatures that drop to minus 133.6 Fahrenheit and clear winter nights. Oh, on, okay, so not this week, obviously, because it's summertime there.
Now, let's see here. Okay. I just want to confirm something for those who are, you who aren't convinced.
Convinced of.
People are forgetting that, you know, that it's winter here. It's going to be cold. What's going on in Australia, for example, where it's summer? Let's see. 34 Celsius.
It's like 95, right?
93.2. Apparently, at one point within the last week, it reached about 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
I think people understand.
Yeah. Well, not depends on your news source. Because okay. Look at, you know, Drudge Report, for example. And they're talking about, you know, historic freeze, all this stuff. And then they're saying thousands of trees have needed to offset carbon footprint. And they're talking about coast. They're talking about, you know, global warming stuff because, and look, it's cold, so that's, there's no global warming. And it's like, that's not how it works.
Heather, Allison asked Heather today, he's like, Heather, what if you had 100 kids? Would you need, you know, but I think what she asked the question because she already had a perplexing thought in her mind. She's like, would you need car seats on the roof? You know, that was her thought. So it got you thinking, like, what is the most children a woman has had? Would you believe it was 69 kids?
Wow.
And it was in the 1750s. Like,
did they all survive?
67 of them survived infancy.
Wow. That's impressive.
Let me see if I can pull that thing up. She had tons. She had like 16 sets of twins, 7 sets of triplets, 4 sets of quadruplets.
At that point, she just must be, like,
dropping eggs.
Spitting them out. I mean, just, she's not even caring about it, right? Because
here it is, right here. Stop. Don't go back.
Like a queen ant, right? It's just...
Mrs. Fedor Vasilyev. Vasilyev and his first wife, whose name is unknown, holds the record for the most children a couple was parented. She gave birth to a total of 69 children. She gave birth to 16 pairs of twins, 7 sets of triplets, 4 sets of quadruplets, and between 1725 and 1765, a total of 27 births. 67 of the children were said to live beyond infancy.
So who had the most births, then, if we're just counting birth events?
I mean, I just can't sort the list that way, right? Number 2 is Mr. and Mrs. Yakov Krylov, and this was in...
Soviet Russia.
1755. Well, not Soviet, 1755, and they had 57 children, 21 births. Then after that, we got 1926.
That's her records get better.
So in 1943, she gave birth to her 55th registered child in Chile.
55th registered?
55th in 1943. This was Leotonia and Geraldo Secunda Albina.
I don't know how you... what your family is like. that your family is a community at that point.
Mm-hmm. 53 children, 38 sons, 15 daughters, 29 births. But this was by 1498, so how good can those records be? Right. It was in Italy. Oh, wait. My thing just jumped around. But yeah, 69 kids.
It's a lot of kids. It's a lot of kids. Let's see. So we had two new TV shows. Sherlock.
I still got to watch it. I fell asleep when I started watching it the other day.
It wasn't very good. I was okay. Unhappy with it.
Yeah, the way it started, I'm like, this better get better. Guess it didn't.
And Community.
Oh, I didn't know that was on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I probably have it. Sickbeard probably pulled it down. I'll have to take a look.
What is Sickbeard?
Sickbeard is a Usenet. It's an RSS. You subscribe to shows. When it sees it on RSS, it downloads them through Usenet.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a season pass for a TiVo type thing, but for internet downloads.
Well, Dan Harmon's back and it feels good.
Is it good?
It is good.
Make you happy?
Yes. It's funny. It's finally funny again. There was nothing funny last year.
Right.
So I'm happy. NSA quantum computer? Doesn't surprise me. I mean, why wouldn't they be working on a quantum computer?
All right. Everyone's working on a quantum computer. Right. I mean, like 100 universities and the NSA.
Yeah.
Duh. Doesn't mean they're close to actually having a functioning one that can factor prime numbers.
I doubt it. I mean, not only do you have to figure out a way to get the quantum bits into superposition and keep them there, and then you have to design the algorithm and the logic so that it will fall into a probabilistic system where you will most likely get the correct answer as opposed to the incorrect answer. That's a really complicated thing to do.
I think they've already have the algorithms.
They have some, but, I mean, you know, you get... It works on the principle of... how can I best explain quantum computing without being wrong and without it sounding overwhelming? And so the idea is, okay, if you have two bits, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have two bits be 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have four different possible states with just two bits. Now, if you have a quantum computer, these can be in superposition. So you have spin up, up, spin up, down, spin down, up, and spin down, down. Let's say you're measuring spin for this. Now, it looks the same, but in fact, the way that you quantify what you're doing is each of these has a particular probability space, which means that, and we'll get into the details, but each of these is four bits as opposed to two. So what you really have is for whatever bits you have, you have 2 to the n bits in quantum bits. So that means that if you have 300 quantum bits, you have 2 to 300 possible mm-hmm. states, if you can somehow manage to get all that together, and that's more atoms than there are in the universe, and that mm-hmm. and then if you have your logic done, it can go into really, you can get a huge amount done if you have certain problems. This doesn't solve every single problem well. This only solves certain problems. And one of them, it just so happens that one of them is prime factorization.
The keystone to encryption.
Right.
Today's...
To modern encryption.
Modern encryption, yeah.
So that what you really have to remember is this 2 to the n bits instead of just 2 to the... You know, instead of just however many bits mm-hmm. that you think you have. So... That's what makes quantum bits so interesting, but also keeping them in that state, having them work that way, it's very mm-hmm. very complicated stuff that I'm way beyond understanding. But I know some of the basics of it.
What do they need quantum computers for when they're just hacking your iPhone anyway, you know?
I think it's future stuff, right? It's you know, they're trying to be prepared for computers getting faster and faster. So they'll be able to you know, do 2048 bit. Now they can do 4096 and even better encryption. Mm-hmm. And that means it gets harder and harder and harder, especially when people are not using your hacked elliptic curve system to break. And so they want to have an easy way to, or easier way.
Yep.
To break it.
Fucking NSA.
But this could also be used for things like protein folding. Mm-hmm. You know, for finding the optimal system, the optimal way that the protein should fold. Mm-hmm. So it can be used for those kind of things. It can be used in medical applications and things like that. It can be used, I mean, quantum computers were ultimately designed because people wanted to be able to predict quantum events. So,
right.
So that, you know, could be used for research on that sort of thing.
Right. So then we just got to come up with a new way to do encryption. Right.
There are other ways to do encryption. There are other possibilities. They just, none of them are as cheap and efficient mm-hmm. as prime factorization right now.
Right. One type pads everywhere.
Anything else you have?
I don't think so. No, I pulled up my interesting nuggets, the children in the cold spot. -133 degrees.
That's pretty crazy. All right, well, let's get on with the show then, and we'll see you in the post show.